I'm sorry I will miss the Boris day, but Boris, it is a lot of fun doing neutrino physics with you. I'll be talking about neutrino masses in grand unified theories. And of course, I couldn't quite decide whether to give an overview of all the models or what else to do. I quickly gave up and decided to just tell you about, sort of give an introduction and tell you about a few ideas that we have been playing around with, and hopefully that's of interest to you. Okay. So the organization of my talk is this way. I will tell you a little bit about what we are trying to understand, what are the challenges for us, for theorists who are looking at physics beyond the standard model from the and trying to understand the neutrino data. Of course, one of the key ideas in this discussion is the seesaw mechanism, which I will tell you a little bit. Now, seesaw could be high scale or a low scale, but I will focus mostly on the high scale seesaw, which fits into the standard grand unified theories with supersymmetry and has a lot of other nice features. I will distinguish between things called type 1 and type 2 seesaw. It's not a name which is just quite caught on or anything, but it's just that there are two kinds of seesaw mechanisms which are not generally discussed in the literature, so I will emphasize that one. And then, is there a pointer or something? Ah, there is a stick, good. And then the main focus of the talk, of course, will be to understand why the neutrino mixings are so much different from the quark mixings. So that's understanding large mixings, and I will try to discuss a couple of ideas which use the so-called type 2 seesaw mechanism to understand that. And then finally, if I have still some time left, I will talk about the inverted hierarchy and associated symmetries with that, and the tests, of course. And all these mechanisms that I will describe will have very definite tests, particularly measurement of the so-called theta 1-3 or UE3 parameter, neutrinoless double beta decay, and the sign of the atmospheric mass difference square. These are really the three key things that we all need to know. Okay, so a quick summary of things that you all know about. Of course, solar and atmospheric data has convincingly, more or less, showed that neutrino masses are non-zero and they mix. And of course, the mixing angles on the neutrino sector are very, very different, much larger than the mixings in the quark sector. And that's the fun part of it. And then we have small delta M square from oscillation data combined with the tritium decay result essentially tells you that the individual masses or the must be less than 2.2 electron volt. Recently, and we will hear more about this in this afternoon, that interpretation of cosmological observations have even made this much stronger, presumably, that the sum is less than something like 0.69 electron volt. And that's really getting into the domain where it's starting to rule out models, or at least making life hard for theorists. Some theorists. Okay. and then the next question is, please interrupt me with questions anytime you feel like. Okay, so how many neutrinos are there? Well, it depends on whether LSND is confirmed or not. Without LSND, of course, we have nu mu, nu tau. It is sufficient to explain the data. If you include LSND, then of course you need at least a sterile neutrino. I'm working within the framework of local Lorentz invariant field theories, and that means you need an extra neutrino, which is a sterile neutrino, which is, I think, which will take us way beyond into a very interesting domain of particle physics. But unfortunately, so far there has been nothing to push us along this direction. No evidence yet from solar data that we need that. There is now new pressure from this WMAP data, which presumably makes this hard, but of course it's still allowed. We know that the so-called 3+1 scenario is probably not completely ruled out. I think it's better for model builders to wait until the mini boon results come in. So I will
wait. Can the neutrino mass include sterile neutrinos?
Yes. I mean, because the steriles get into Big Bang equilibrium, so they come into abundance, so that includes everything. And that's the problem. Now, wait for a mini boon, and so we will put a moratorium on sterile neutrino model building until that time, I think. So I will focus in on this talk on three neutrinos and how to understand things from a grand unified perspective, which means there are a lot of interesting ideas that I will not discuss at all. The first basic assumption that is made, and that is not so unnatural, it's sort of more implied by the theories, is that the neutrino is a Majorana particle. In other words, it satisfies some relation like this nu equal to e to the I alpha c nu bar transpose, a relation which Boris has emphasized quite a bit over the years. You have got, you write two terms, which is a neutrino mass terms in this Majorana, you have nu transpose nu, nu not a nu bar, whereas for the charge leptons you have a bar and LR. So you have two mass matrices, and then you diagonalize both of them and put them together with in the weak current, and that gives you the net neutrino mixing matrix, which is what the oscillation experiments look for. And the definition is you have the flavors on this side and the mass eigenstates on this side, and this is the mixing matrix. And its eigenvalues will be, its elements will be denoted by flavor on one side and mass on the other side. All this you know. Mixing pattern, solar present favorite, and I think Camland has sort of made it much more compelling that it is the nu mean nu e mixing with large neutrino mixing with sine square 2 theta somewhere around in that range, so pretty large value. So Camland presumably somewhere around 0.8621, again pretty large value, and also more or less eliminates all non-oscillation solutions to the solar neutrino problem. At least makes them much less compelling. Then the atmospheric neutrino data, we just heard about this, with a mixing angle which is somewhere around 0.8, probably 0.8 is a bit on the low side, but I'm not sure that that's completely outside the domain of possibilities, 0.821. The reactor data, of course, has the measures the so-called UE3, which is less than 0.16 for this mass range. So on the whole, you can put it all together into a mass matrix, which has these entries, which are large, C and S, cosine and sine, these are large values, and epsilon, which is small, which is this particular entry. Okay, so this is what we would like to understand from a theoretical point of view. So, and that is about the mixing angle. However, things are much less certain as far as the masses go, okay, because there are three possibilities and all three are allowed. That is, you have the so-called normal hierarchy where you have one light, next one, and so on, and this is the one that corresponds to the atmospheric mass difference square. Or you could have all three degenerate, and their mass differences are essentially what you measure in the solar and the atmospheric. Or you could have an inverted pattern where you have the solar pair at a higher mass level than the last one, and of course the atmospheric is a transition between this and that. And here is a pictorial cartoon of that. This is the hierarchical normal hierarchy inverted. So you see that the sign of the delta m atmospheric square switches between these two. In the middle one is the degenerate, and there you could have essentially either sign for the atmospheric square. So these are the three possibilities, and of course experiments eventually will tell us which of these is the right one, and then we can build theories for that. So what we still need to know are several, and I think there is a very important for experiments to really push ahead and give as much information on all these three as possible. The first one is neutrino a Majorana particle? Is it its own antiparticle? So crucial experiment is neutrino HW beta decay. And the limits that are expected or at least being talked about are quite interesting, as I will tell you. The UE3, the long baseline experiments, there are several of them. Then the mass pattern, whether the sign is positive or negative, and of course, you know, whether it's degenerate or hierarchical and so on. Okay, so these are really the things that we would like to know. Okay, so that's end of my introduction. Okay, so please interrupt me again so that I use up all my 45 minutes and not run out of transparencies in the middle. Well, if I do, I will fish out some. I have them over there. But okay, so what are the challenges? What are the things that we would like to know? How to understand why the neutrino masses are so much smaller than the electron up quark down quark masses? Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing is why two of the mixing angles are large, and the third one is small. And again, that's very different from the quark sector, whereas we do seem to notice some kind of a symmetry between quarks and leptons in many areas. Finally, the mass pattern. And a key question there is, we know that the solar mass difference square is much less than the atmospheric mass difference square. Is there a natural way to understand this? Okay, so all, and of course, finally, the grand theory should have an explanation for all of these things. Okay, let me start with the first issue, which is the why is neutrino mass much smaller than the electron up and down quark mass? And there are many, many ways to do that, but one of the ways which is certainly very appealing and fits into a picture where many things you can be explained, as I will discuss, is to introduce a right-handed neutrino and give it a large Majorana mass. Okay? And since this is a singlet under the standard model gauge group, you can give it a mass without breaking the standard model symmetry. So you can make it as large as you want, much larger than the weak scale. However, that's a new scale, so we are talking about new physics. And what do you have? You have a left neutrino, you have a left neutrino coming in, it emits a right-handed neutrino. Since this has SU2L quantum number, it's a doublet, you must emit a Higgs to conserve the quantum number. That Higgs acquires a vacuum expectation value, and it generates the so-called seesaw formula for the neutrino masses. Okay, so what you have is Dirac mass matrix here, right-handed neutrino mass matrix here, and the Dirac mass matrix. This is a weak scale mass matrix. This is a high scale, new scale physics. And you see that because this is much higher than this, you have a natural suppression of the neutrino mass compared to the lepton and the quark masses. Okay. The key, so this I will call the type 1 seesaw, because this is the one that's generally talked about. It has one term, and we will see that once you try to build models, this thing changes, and you have a different thing which is called type 2 seesaw. But a key point that I want to emphasize here is that the right-handed neutrino mass, as we will see soon, is much less than the Planck mass, which presumably is a natural scale beyond the standard model. And that will be an issue which any theory should like to explain. Why is it that the right-handed neutrino mass is so much less than the Planck scale? That's like a new hierarchy problem, which is more or less on the same level at the Higgs mass hierarchy that many, many people are worrying about, the so-called gauge hierarchy of the standard model. And this right here, so if you look at the atmospheric mass difference square, it's about 0.05 eV. So that means that at least one of the neutrinos must have mass bigger than this mass. And typically, the Dirac neutrino maximum mass should be less than the top quark mass, which essentially saturates the weak scale. And if you put all of that, what you find is that the right-handed neutrino mass, the heaviest of them, should be less than 10 to the 15 GeV, which is many orders of magnitude less than the Planck mass. So the question is, why is this, what's the reason for that kind of a mass hierarchy? So if you put in a mass, right-handed neutrino mass, into your standard model, that doesn't really tell you why this is so much smaller. So there must be something going on. And there are several ideas. One is that this is associated with a gauge symmetry, which is the B minus L. We will see that there are some interesting reasons for that. Or it could, for example, be associated with a horizontal symmetry, or perhaps some other symmetry that we don't know yet. Of course, the other possibility always is, if you get rid of the right-hand side, you have no problem. And that's what people pursuing extra dimensions are telling us, that there is no Planck scale which is that high, it's a much smaller scale. And that's a whole new ball game, and I'm not sure if that is on as satisfactory a footing as the standard grand unified seesaw supersymmetry framework. Okay, so I will not discuss this at all. Okay, and now, so what's the, so let me give an example, the local B minus L example. You take the standard model and you put the right-handed neutrino, one per generation, into this theory. And then all you have to do is look at the usual anomaly cancellation, which is a triangle anomaly, which goes with the gauge currents. And immediately you find that the maximal electroweak group is really SU2L cross SU2R cross U1B minus L. So B minus L sort of comes out naturally. Without the right-handed neutrino, the U1B minus L is not something that you can gauge. It's anomalous. But with the right-handed neutrino, this becomes anomaly-free gauge group. And this is the symmetry that emerges. This is part of course, a bigger grand unified group, which I will be coming to pretty soon. So it's a nice framework to talk about. The quarks and leptons transform rather nicely under this. You have got left-handed doublet, you have got right-handed doublet under these two groups, the left-handed leptons and the right-handed leptons. And this theory also has a very nice way to write the electric charge, which is different from the standard model. In the standard model, if you recall, you write I3L plus Y over 2. And Y is a number that you fit in depending on which particle you are talking about. It is no dynamical kind of origin. But in this model, you have a left isospin, right isospin, and something that's physical, baryon minor lepton number. Okay, so in some sense, this is much more satisfactory. And of course, from this, you derive by simple differentiation that the breaking of parity implies the breaking of lepton number. And that means the neutrino is a Majorana particle. So remember in one of the slides, I said that one of the major assumptions that goes into many of the discussions of the neutrino masses is that it's a Majorana particle. And these theories sort of naturally tell you that it should be a Majorana particle because lepton number is not a good symmetry. And the way the seesaw mechanism arises in these models is that you first break the right-handed symmetry at some scale, and then in the neutrino left, right-handed neutrino basis, what you have are lots of zeros and a non-zero entry corresponding to the right-handed neutrino mass. And then you come down to the standard model scale, and turns out these two entries fill up, but also this entry too. Okay, if you have a theory which has got both SU2s or bigger groups which contain that, this entry is almost automatically there. So therefore, if you diagonalize this, what you find is not the seesaw formula that I showed you before, but it's a different seesaw formula. You have got the standard one, which is the so-called type one, but you have a new one, which is induced by this. The important point is that this is also suppressed as you increase the scale of the B minus L symmetry. Okay, so therefore, it does not, the introduction of this term does not make your understanding of the small neutrino mass any weaker. I mean, this is, it's all consistent. As Vr goes to infinity, both the terms become smaller. But what's important is that if somehow, experimentally, we feel that this is the one that's being favored, then that indicates something like a parity symmetry at high scale. Because otherwise, if you don't have a symmetry which includes the SU2R some way, you don't get the type 2 seesaw. Okay, so let me, I just want to emphasize these two points. That is, there are therefore two kinds of seesaw mechanisms. One is the type 1, where you don't have the first term that I showed you before. And those are generically models without a parity symmetry. But there are a whole bunch of models left, right, SO10, E6, SU3 cubed, and so on, where this term is almost mandatory. And what you, the origin of that term, again, is that somehow your right-handed neutrino is picking up mass from some Higgs boson, but if you have a left-right symmetric theory, there is a partner to this in the left sector which can couple directly to the left-handed neutrino, which also has a non-zero vacuum expectation value. And that's the reason why this term is coming up. Okay, so therefore, and what I will do from now on is, there are lots and lots of models which use this. What I will do is to focus on the second one and discuss some ideas. Just a little bit more on this, and that is, of course, the magnitude of the, as you have already realized, the magnitude of the neutrino mass probes the scale of B minus L, And that's a very important piece of information, because then we know that after the standard model, we have another scale there before the Planck scale. And as I told you before, there was an upper limit, and you also have some sort of a lower limit if you try to use leptonic masses instead of the quark masses to scale your seesaw, and that's somewhere around 10 to the 12 GeV or so. So it's the range we are talking about for this new symmetry is between 10 to the 12 to 10 to the 15 GeV, and this, of course, these numbers are very close to the so grand unification scale where the couplings unify, which is around 10 to the 16 GeV. So this mechanism fits very well with the unification of gauge couplings. So for example, into SO10 supersymmetric grand unified theory, which I will talk about a little bit more. And of course, that also has another nice feature, that it allows you to understand baryogenesis by a very simple leptogenesis mechanism. And that also requires high mass right-handed neutrinos. Okay, so, and of course, it fits into the conventional ideas about cosmology, about inflation and other stuff. So that's the framework. Doesn't mean that it's right or that's the right way to do it, but certainly looks quite appealing. Now let me, so we have this seesaw, general seesaw formula or type 2 seesaw formula. How can we understand the large mixings? Well, that's a highly non-trivial problem actually, because if you just count parameters in the simplest case, you have at least 12 parameters in this theory. Just this is about 9 parameters in a basis where this is diagonal, so 9 plus 3 is, these are all 3 by 3 matrices, so 3 plus 9 is 12. I mean, of course, it could be more. You could try to reduce it by imposing extra symmetries, but you see that the 12 is certainly much larger than 6, even without introducing any CP phase. Of course, once you put in CP phase, these things, this counting gets all upset.
Let me ask you the question that you asked about.
Yes.
I would guess that just the type 1 seesaw
has
18 parameters, right? This is the standard number.
With CP?
With CP.
With CP, oh yes, sure, yes, yes. I didn't include CP because things are bad enough without it. You know, I think I will not even try to get into CP this lecture because, I mean, that's one privilege you have when giving a model theory talk. I mean, you can ignore things and stuff. Okay, so that's one of the things that I will ignore for the time being. And I think this is a serious comment in the sense that if we make some progress in understanding even without CP, then I think that at least will take us a little bit, give us some ideas, and then we proceed to the next step. Okay. So what can you do? Well, you can say the second term dominates, which is what many people do. You can say the first term dominates, and I will tell you that there are some nice ways to understand things with that. And both are important. Okay, so therefore, one should not really ignore either of them and see whether there are some simple ways to understand the large mixings. Okay, so one of the, as I was telling you, you include the right-handed neutrino in the standard model picture. And one of the nice things of this is that the theory at some scale becomes like an SO10 theory, because if you include right-handed neutrino, you have a left-right, and then that becomes something like SU2L cross SU2R with this Patti Salam SU4 color, and then you go to SO10. So there is a rather nice chain, and of course the hierarchy of masses is something like this, or could be slightly different, as long as there is a scale in the middle which corresponds to the B minus L, and it gives you the right values for the neutrino masses. So seesaw then is linked to grand unification. We'll see that making it into SO10 is not just a nice thing to do, it can make the model predictive, because in the previous slide we saw that there are many, many parameters. So the idea is to reduce parameters, and once you have an SO10 theory, the quarks and leptons get linked, and that therefore, the hope arises that you can reduce the number of parameters and make your understanding somewhat better than before. So I will talk about now for a little while on SO10. Okay, so there are two classes of SO10 models depending on how you want to generate the right-handed neutrino mass. You can either break the SO10 has a local B minus L symmetry. You can either break it by a Higgs which has B minus L number equal to 1, or you can break it by B minus L equal to 2. in the language of SO10, I don't want to get too technical, but 16 Higgs is one that you generally use to give a mass to the right-handed neutrino, and there are some operators that you write. The point is that there is one drawback to this approach, and that's that once you have B minus L equal to 1, you can write operators which break the so-called R parity. In other words, once you have supersymmetry, these models don't have a dark matter, stable dark matter. So, I mean, we don't know that the supersymmetry neutralino is the dark matter, but that's a common lore and it's an attractive selling point for supersymmetry. So we would like to have that, in which case you need extra symmetries to generate a dark matter in these theories. On the other hand, if you break your B minus L symmetry by some Higgs boson which has got a quantum number 2, then you don't have to do that. And 126 dimensional representation has that property. Okay, so it essentially has a right-handed neutrino with some object. These have B minus L equal to 1, 1, so this has got a unit 2. And once you have that, the so-called R parity, which was essential to understand the stability of the dark matter, is becomes automatic. So that's an advantage for the those classes of models. Now, once you push ahead with SO10, however, there is a good news and bad news from SO10. The good news or bad news come essentially from the fact that SO10 has this SU4 color, which links the right-handed neutrino Dirac masses to the up quark mass, because the lepton number symmetry tells you that the up quark is essentially similar, or at least at some scale it is identical with the right-handed, the neutrino. So therefore, the masses are linked. So it is good in a sense because it reduces parameters, and the fact that there is a hierarchy observed in the quark sector, that is up quark is much less than the charm and top and so on, immediately implies that there is a normal hierarchy for neutrinos, and that's very good because that gives an explanation of why the solar mass difference square is observed to be much smaller than the atmospheric thing. And that was one of the puzzles that I was trying to allude to before. So that's the good part of SO10. However, the bad part is, of course, that because of this thing, of course, you get the quark mixings and the neutrino mixings are identical. So you have to do something more. And, of course, one of the things that you'll do is to put in symmetries so that you forbid appropriate couplings and stuff like that. Now, next step in this game is to see if you have a hierarchical pattern as is dictated by SO10. What kind of mass matrix do you eventually need to get the right mixing pattern? It turns out that that's very different from the quark mass matrices. You essentially have, if you scale out the atmospheric mass, square root of that, but you essentially have almost identical entries here, but small numbers over there. Okay, so this is one possibility. Now, of course, small numbers could be zero, as Danny and Sally Glasser and so on have pointed out. That's certainly an interesting pattern, but generally you have a pattern like that. The question is, can such a form arise naturally in SO10? So that's the question I'd like to ask, without doing too much fiddling around. And there, it turns out that there is a model which does that, and that's what I'm coming down to next. I don't know how I'm doing with time. Pretty well, I suppose. Because you seem relaxed, so yes, good. So what this I will call a minimal SO10 model. Okay. This is a model which Babu and I discussed some time ago, and it has gone through some ups and downs. But I think right now is an up moment for this, so I will talk about it. So what is the Higgs content? Well, minimal. So minimal means don't do more than what you need to do. You know, just looking at the theory. So what you need to do? Well, you have to break the symmetries, break the B minus L by 126, as I was telling you. Then you need to have something which breaks the standard model symmetry, and that's a 10. So it's essentially this Higgs and that Higgs and something that breaks grand unification symmetry, but they don't couple to fermions, so we don't care about them. So it's, if you have these two multiplets, then there are very few parameters, because I'm getting into a bit too much into group theory, but let me just quickly get through that. What you have are two sets of matrices because of these couplings. and I can diagonalize one of them, so I have got 3 parameters here, and forgetting CP violation, I have got 6 parameters here. Okay, so I have 9 parameters from there. Really, so that's all the parameters that go into the fermion sector in this theory. And once you have that, you write down your mass matrices, you give vacuum expectation value to the Higgs bosons in there, and that's all standard model building trick. You go through it and you have a whole bunch of fancy looking expressions with left brackets, right brackets, and so on. So, and if you look at the neutrino mass, though, the important point is that the neutrino mass in this model is not an independent thing that you put in. It's already expressible in terms of the matrices which went into a Yukawa coupling. So, for example, the neutrino mass is, if you want to keep this entry, this is the F times that, and then you have a standard seesaw entry. Okay. So, the point is that both the Dirac masses, which now are related to the charged leptons and the quarks, and the right-handed neutrino mass are proportional to the same Yukawa couplings. That's why this model is very predictive. And just a quick list of a lot of people who have worked in this this theory. In the beginning, there are it gave to small solar mixing angles, because it's, even though it looks very simple, there are still lots of some freedom in the theory, so that it went through several phases. And I will talk about some recent different ideas which came in this context, which is that in particular, if you take the seesaw mechanism of type 2 in this theory and demand that this term, the first term, dominates, then it's very easy using those formulas to say that the neutrino mass is proportional to the difference between the down quark and the charged lepton masses. And that's really a very important point. Once you have that difference, let's look at the 2-3 sector and let's see how the large atmospheric angle comes out. Well, you write down the MD, the down Dirac mass, which is like this, and then the lepton, which looks like that. It scales with MB and M tau. But if you remember the grand unified theories, as you scale the bottom and the top tau mass from the weak scale to the grand unification scale, they become almost equal. So in this difference, this one actually cancels out. And one cancels out to become a very small number of something like 0.1 or so. So therefore, this becomes of the same order as these parameters in there. And so what you have is a large mixing angle. Okay, so there were no symmetries, nothing additional that was put in. And this was an observation which was made by these people, that you have a small number. So without doing anything, just making the normal observation that as you extrapolate the bottom and tau, they become almost equal, you get a large mixing angle. The question then, of course, is this a complete theory or it's just a partial explanation? So we have been looking at that, so I'll quickly go through it with two of my students, whether we can explain the large solar and the small UE3 in this theory. And it turns out it's possible to get it. I will not get into too much details, but just quickly, what we need to analyze this theory completely is, as you saw, the B tau extrapolation from the weak scale to the grand unification scale. And you put them into the matrices, analyze and search for parameters, and see whether you can get the right solution. And it turns out you can. Okay? And here are some details, but I think I don't have enough time to get to the details. But let me just at least tell you what we put in and what we get. So what we do is we look at the papers which have discussed the running of the quark masses to the gut scale for different values. In supersymmetry, there is of course a parameter which is called tangent beta, and this running depends on that. These are all details, but you get these things out of these papers. Then you put in the CKM, which is another input, and then trying to fit with the leptons, what you get are the unknown parameters which I denoted as R and K. And it turns out the solutions correspond to the negative signs for the strange down and charm quark. For fermions, of course, the sign of the mass is irrelevant because that's just a gamma 5 transformation. So I could either make it positive or negative. And these are the final parameters which give you the correct numbers. And we have some plots which I certainly wanted to show you. And that's, so for tangent beta, we get This is a plot between sine square 2 theta solar and atmospheric. So you see that it's not a plot which is completely full in the sense that you cannot predict anything that you want. For example, the sine square theta A goes sort of maximum up to something like 0.9, maybe a little bit over there. And the sine square solar, 2 theta solar goes, is also above 0.9. Okay, so this is a very definite prediction, and therefore this model can be ruled out pretty soon, or at least or confirmed either way. What is interesting is also the prediction for the UE3, which is almost a narrow band like this. So you don't get small values at all. It's almost at the limit, sort of 0.1, 0.16, 0.15, 0.16, that kind of value. Okay, so these are so in other words, the point is that this model, which has a nice way to understand the atmospheric large mixing angle from the beta unification, also gives rise to these nice predictions that can be tested. So these are again repeating the same things: sine square atmospheric between this value, this is over 0.9, and so on. Okay, so that's the end of my SO10 part, and I think I may have still 5 minutes, so I will go to another idea which corresponds not to the normal hierarchy patterns but to the degenerate pattern.
May I ask you something?
Yes, sure.
The solar mixing angle in this model, can it be maximal?
Solar can be maximal, but not atmospheric.
Okay.
Yeah, solar can be, it's very, yeah. Yes, string theory, I know, that was old perturbative string theories, but, you know, nowadays, I don't know, I mean, with deep brains, the game has been more opened up in some sense, right? I'm not sure that. I think that was the main driving force for 16s. Yes, I mean, that could be, but, you know, But you know, I'm sort of going bottom up, and we'll see where we end up. Okay, the next idea that I want to talk about, and I think I'll be very quick on this, is a different way, and look to us like an interesting way to get large mixing without doing any detailed models. And that is, suppose you have a pattern of neutrinos which are almost degenerate. Something very interesting happens in this case, and this is what I want to get into. And this is the way, the kind of theory you will be talking about is a quark lepton unified theory, something like SO10. So that at the seesaw scale, remember, they were always, normally if you don't do something sophisticated, you always end up with quark and theta, the leptonic mixing angles identical. So what we say is that, suppose they are identical, is there some way that at weak scale, they can be different? And that's the approach I would like to discuss now. It turns out that the degenerate, quasi-degeneracy can come very easily from a type 2 seesaw, because that has got this first term which has no apparent hierarchical pattern. It is this term which is very hierarchical, because this is linked to the quark masses, we know they are hierarchical, so this is normal hierarchy pattern. But on the other hand, this could be simply identity matrix. There is nothing which tells us that it's not an identity matrix. So, suppose, let's assume this is more or less identity, then the mass differences actually very nicely come from here. Because if you look at the mass differences, the solar mass difference is proportional to charm quark square, etc., etc. So that's, you know, so it's very nice features in this model. So the idea is, can radiative corrections then magnify your mixing angle? And here is a 2x2 example, and then I will discuss a 3x3 example, then I'll quit. So what you have is, you have your seesaw mechanism operating on a very high scale. But we know that when you come to the weak scale, there are radiative corrections, which are known as the renormalization group equations. And there are factors which you have to multiply the mass matrix for the neutrino. So you have a neutrino mass matrix, which is quasi-degenerate, and then you multiply them by some radiative correction factors. And typically, they are something like Yukawa couplings proportional to the lepton masses square, 16 pi square, and logs and stuff. Okay, that's the usual kind of textbook kind of things. Then suppose you look at the 2x2 sector, you have the quasi-degenerate, you have some off diagonals, you give you small mixing angles, and now you put in and there is something here, and then you now do your radiative correction. So the red things are the radiative correction. So once you put in radiative corrections, what you get for supersymmetric theory is a negative sign here. And you see that these two terms could cancel each other in principle. And if they do cancel each other, which they do, which they can for a range of parameters, you will have a mass matrix which leads to a large mixing angle. Okay? And because this is the tangent theta, and the radiative corrections can be large enough to cancel that. Okay? So there you get a mixing angle which is large. However, one of the restrictions of these kind of theories is that you cannot have M0 to be too small. You have, must have a lower bound on the quasi-degeneracy. That's something like, depends on the model you are talking about, whether it's 0.3, or soon I will talk about another theory where it's 0.1 and so on. But the bottom line is that somewhere in the 0.1 to 0.3 range.
Is it always negative, this
Yes, for standard model it's, you know, with my choice of sign. With standard model it has the opposite sign. Supersymmetry has...
Supersymmetry always gives you a negative.
Right, that's right. Where a standard model gives a positive sign. So with my choice of sign. Okay. Actually, there is this you could see another way, which we learned from a paper by the Spanish group, that you could write your renormalization group equations in a mass basis, mass and mixing angle basis, and then what you find, something which is very interesting, that the mixing angles evolve with certain number of things here, which are the h square over 4, 16 pi squares and all that stuff, times this thing called d32, which is a combination of masses which I have written down in bold over here. And you see that that's sum of mass divided by difference of masses. So as these become quasi-degenerate, this factor just becomes huge. So therefore it changes your seesaw scale mixing prediction to a huge value at the weak scale. So that's really the bottom line for this. And in a paper recently, we tried to see whether one could really do this for three generations. So what our point was that, suppose you assume that at the grand unification scale, all your mixing angles are like quark mixing. So in other words, we chose equality. Theta 1, 2 is like theta cabibo, theta 2, 3 is like VCB, theta 1, 3 is like VUB, because those are the corresponding entries. Then you do radiative correction. What you find is that in this quasi-degeneracy limit, indeed the angles become maximal, provided you have the degeneracy mass to be something like 0.1 electron volt. I'll stop right now. Let me just show you this picture and my concluding slide. So these are the evolution equations. You start out with the values which are the quark mixings. You run them down to the weak scale, and you see that indeed it's very interesting that the theta 1,3 does not blow up. You would have expected that too, but because it starts with a very small value, which is VUB, it remains less than 0.1. It's actually around 0.08. Okay, so that's, and I just wanted to also mention that this is very interesting because neutrinoless double beta decay, there are some discussions that,
more than discussions,
that there is some value around here. Anyway, looking at the map data, certainly does shrink the range to this. And again, the virtue of these class of models are that their shelf life may be not too long. So if I give a talk next year, you may not hear this part of the talk. But we should know. I mean, these are the things we were supposed to do, I suppose, as a theorist. Anyway, so this is, I had one of few more things to say, but I think I'll just stop here. So the conclusion is that the seesaw with high scale has a lot of virtue to it. I mean, whether that's true or not, we will have to wait and see. But I have worked in this lecture within that framework, and we have an explanation as to why this scale is much less than the weak scale. So that's B minus L symmetry, and it fits nicely into the grand unified theories. And also the heavy right-handed neutrino is a nice framework for understanding baryogenesis. And finally, I think I didn't really get to talk about the inverted hierarchy, so I have it at the top over here. I somehow anticipated I will not be able to talk. There is this possibility that you could have an inverted hierarchy with a symmetry like this, which can arise from a horizontal symmetry. One of the tests this model is a UE3 parameter. Again, you need a large UE3 to fit the solar mixing angle. I didn't get a chance to talk about that. But here are the other two theories, the degenerate masses The double beta will be a nice test for that. Normal hierarchy SO10 model, again UE3 is a test for that. Let me stop. Thank you. Yes, yes. Right.
I'd like to ask the current lawyer. My understanding now is that the science for 2K atmosphere is greater than 0.12 or 0.13 and 90% confidence level. How close would you be able to push it toward maximum?
Question. That grows with statistics, that sensitivity. But you've already got 5 years under your belt, so just to win by a factor of square root two, that's the next 5 years we're looking at. Very hard to do that.
So I mean, his maximum value is 0.96.
Well, that was sort of.
One would never be able to win.
Not. Probably not with super. No. There's the off-axis experiments have a good chance of making a fairly precise measurement of the limits of the field, but I don't recall the limits for that. I'm sure you're testing it better than. What's the number saving you?
Well, I don't. Especially as it gets close to one.
Yeah.
It gets
harder, but it's fairly remarkable that so many of these predictions are petering out long before 0.95.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
very falsifiable with the
current
data.
Yeah.
And then you may want to raise the question going forward.
Yeah.
Yes. If it is below 0.9, yeah. Yes.
I think Cameron should be able to say something fairly definitive. Right now,
even Kamlin will have problems really measuring very accurately the solar.
Measuring it accurately, but they should be able to get statistically away from maximal mixing.
Yeah.
If I recall their test points, which they've scattered around a large mixing angle.
Depends on delta M square.
Yeah.
Depends, where the delta M square is from.
I mean, solar can be strong.
Right. Is it a generic feature of models that they're able to naturally explain the large mix of angles and also predict fairly large theta 1 views, or is that not true?
The models, yes, I have looked at least two classes of models. The inverted hierarchy, that's definitely true. If you don't have large theta 1, 3, the problem becomes that your sine square theta 2 theta solar tends to become close to maximal. And in these class of SO10 models that I have looked at, also is similar feature. I mean, UE3 there is almost a narrow band. I mean, it's 0.15, 0.1, something like that.
It seems to me as far as the class of the model, you consider what that model, the hierarchy issue, whether it's inverted or not, is much more a distinguishing feature.
Yeah. Yes. I think theta 1-3 can change, yes. I mean, this particular so-called minimal model that we showed, it is definitely large theta 1-3.
Are there any models where theta 1-3 is zero?
I know we had one with 0.08, but I don't know if one in which is zero.
Or some symmetry or something like that.
See, generally, if you have LE minus LME minus L tau theta 1-3 is 0, however, in the symmetry limit, however, the solar is maximum. So they are sort of linked, and one goes down, the other goes up. So,
By the way, we can count on solar not being maximum.
No, yes, personally. Yes, yes, yes. Kamlin certainly best fit for it. Yeah. Yes, yes. Oh, the right-handed neutrinos? Oh no, they decay away long ago in the early stage of the universe. Yes, they are quite massive and their lifetimes are pretty short. Yeah. I mean, in this kind of generic class of theories, the dark matter particle is a neutralino. Generally.
Thanks again.